You're listening to the Business Buzz podcast, part of Business Buzz, your local community networking events, both online and back to face-to-face, where you can come along and meet people, new connections, and grow your business through and with the people in the room. We love it.
We do love network. We love the Business Buzz networking. It's really relaxed and informal, and it's good fun and a very, very supportive community.
The great thing is that there's no prepared speeches. Everyone gets a 7-second intro. And if you fail that 7 seconds, you have to make tea for the rest of the week for everybody. It's great.
Excellent. That's easy, isn't it?
It's good.
And who are you?
I'm Angus Grady, and I'm part of this Old Dogs and New Tricks. I'm the Old Tricks part of this.
I'm really worried that that makes me the new dog.
Should we rename this? No.
It's too late now.
It's too late now. Yeah.
And I'm, just in case you didn't know, I'm Jill Kike, your business sat nav, guiding you on your business journey. Trying to take control of the reins here and guide Angus to talk to our guests and give a little bit, a few tips on.
And we have some cracking guests. So I hope you enjoy what you're about to hear.
So, Angus, what's going on today?
Well, it's podcast day, isn't it? We couldn't get a good guest, so I phoned Martin. No, joking aside. I called Martin is somebody who I've kind of wanted to get on the podcast for ages, but he's so super busy that thankfully we've managed to grab him today.
I thought you were going to say our list is so long that it's taken us a while to get to the bottom.
Yeah, but the point is that I was hoping people would assume that without having to say it. So you've blown it now. We're going to have to stop and re-record.
No, obviously our list is hugely long.
Massive, darling, massive. And we have, of course, we've got Alfie Best
absolutely
lined up at some point, if he ever gets back to us. Anyway,
and Richard Branson?
Richard Branson. But I just want to welcome Martin, because I've known Martin for years, and we have been through choppy water, calm water, whirlpools, the lot. And I respect what he does massively. Not only is he good at what he does, don't tell him this, he's a thumpingly good guy. He really is a good bloke, and he's got a story to tell. Morning, Martin.
Good morning. Nice
and
to
see
you.
And this is Martin Gladish from
The Business Ghost.
And what do you do? Why The Business Ghost? Because people already are thinking, is it a tour? Is it some sort of...
Well, there is a little bit of magic involved, but I'm a ghostwriter of business books. So, and what I suppose it's a fairly small category anyway, but what makes me you'll like this one, Angus, my category of one is about the storytelling. I think most business books are boring. And so I'm interested in giving them some story, some plot and some intrigue to make the readers want to read it.
Did you say stories, what and what?
Stories, plot, intrigue. Okay. As well as that's how we learn, isn't it? It's by sort of wanting to read the book. It's not just a textbook.
So. I know. And do you know what? So many business books you get and you think, my God, this is like double geography. I don't want to be doing this. Absolutely. And then you bump into the person, they say, what did you think of chapter 4? And you think, what? I never got past chapter 1.
Page 1.
Page 1 of chapter 1.
I've just done a little video, a little promo video, which has just gone on LinkedIn today, actually. And I start off by tearing the pages out of a business book. And Dave, who's doing the video, he says, what are you doing? And I said, well, somebody asked me to do an edit on a business book or how to make this business book a bit more interesting. And I thought, well, to start with, we can get rid of all the fluff. So that's how the video opens.
Oh, I like that.
Is there too much fluff, or is it just there's no flow?
Well, I think what happens is that people start off with a really good idea, and they think that is a really good idea. But someone's told me I need to write a book, so they go and just add a load of. They haven't got enough to make a book, so they just add fluff rather than saying, "Well, how can I turn this idea into something that's worthy of reading, that it's got story, it's got depth, and so I can really tell the story, get the idea across in the best possible way, not just add stuff to it and retell the same thing over and over again, but actually give it depth and value, make it connect with the reader.
I think it goes back to that double geography thing where you know that you only know one thing about the Vale of Kent. Yeah. So you bring everything else in that could possibly be related and you fluff it out. That's yeah. Right. So many business books, though. I mean, gosh, even in Kindle form, you think, why did you bother? Even in, you know, yeah. So
I guess maybe, is it because it's too easy to self-publish now?
Yeah, there used to be a barrier when a publisher used to say, well, if I'm going to commit to you as an author, I need to know I can sell books. Nowadays, it's there's no barrier to that. You, yeah, it still looks the part. It's still a bit of kudos to say I'm a published author. But my argument with it is always, what if somebody actually reads that book? It sort of takes away all the kudos you've got.
I love that. It's like that thing. You know, but what if we fail? But what if we win? But what if they read it? My God, what's going to happen?
I'm going to say that's Angus. That's where all of the thing that we're beginning to ourselves up here falls
I'm
away.
Actually, they find I'm actually found writing out. That down. What if they read it?
What if they read
yeah,
it?
Yeah, because I think it's absolutely right. Because some of it, I'm sure 90% of business books never ever get read.
Again, I think I've stole half of this from you, Angus, but I say to people that a book should be self-education, not shelf decoration. And I'm sure I stole at least half of that from you.
Not but, shelf development.
Yeah, I think that's the bit that probably inspired the thought. But I've got so many business books on my shelf and I've not read most of them, or I've started to read every one I've bought. Most of them don't get finished because I sort of think, right, I've got it. Or, yeah, I've got what you mean, or you've told me that in already. Yeah. You're just telling me the same thing in a different way. And it's got, I also think if a business, the first business book I ever read was The 1 Minute Manager. And then it was Who Moved My Cheese? And they're short business books. They're great. They tell the story. And if it has to be a short book, then make it a short book.
Yeah, yeah. And you know that you've got rid of the best rubbish books, if you see what I mean, when you go to the Oxfam shop and there's four other editions of it on the shelf before That's you've right. even added yours. Yeah. I know. I think it's too easy. But you've actually got a publishing company as well, haven't you?
Well, what's happened is I'm a storyteller. I don't really like technical things, but I've been continually asked by people saying, right, you've produced my manuscript. And sometimes it's just coaching. So I ghostwrite. But they've got this final product and they say, what am I going to do with it now? And so I've sort of forced my hand really to get involved in the publishing side. So I don't really do it. I've partnered with people to get the publishing and to be able to publish people's books for them as well. So okay. That's a work in progress just starting up. But okay. I've got connections with publishers as well. So we've got a number of options there.
So what I want to know, and what probably our listeners want to know, is how the heck did you get to here? Was there a life-changing clash of, and I know that your faith is massively important, so I don't mean to, you know, sort of play down anything when I say a massive clap of thunder and whatever else, because I suddenly thought as I was saying that, oops. But, you know, what was the moment, you know, what got you to where you are?
Well, I suppose, yeah, faith, that would be a very, very long conversation if we got into talking about the sort of beliefs and things like that. But I was in sales for most of my, I started off in retail, various sort of shops and that sort of thing, and then ended up in sales and just realised that I just wasn't very good at it. I was...
you don't hear people say that, yeah.
Well, I was reasonably good at sort of, I was sort of mid sales table for relationship building ones. But when it came to just selling widgets, lots of widgets, closing, I just I was good at building relationships, but not the hard selling sort of thing. But what I realized through doing that is that any sales team I was in the early days of sort of following up a sales call with an email, that's where I really stood out. All the team got me to write their emails for them and that sort of thing. And it really started to, and then I just got fed up of going into, you know, if you've ever worked in London, it's leave the house at 6 o'clock in the morning, especially at winter. You get home at 7, 8 o'clock at night. It's dark when you leave. It's dark when you get back. It's just depressing. And you're on busy trains, busy London. And I just got to a point where one day I just came home and said to my wife, to Emma, I said, I just can't do this anymore. And I quit my job and I had a mortgage and bills and all that sort of thing, but I just couldn't do it anymore. It was either that or cry. And so I quit my job and decided to try and look for a franchise to buy into. Looked at a number of things, and then just by chance, a friend of mine said, we've got a, he ran a company that did mergers and acquisitions, and he said to me, you could come and do some writing for us. They wrote these things called information memorandums, which is basically putting together all the good bits of the companies they were trying to sell and saying and presenting it in a sales format in a short 9-10 page document. And I went and started doing that freelance, which was quite an exciting thing for me. That was about 16 years ago. And then thought, I can't just do this. So I thought, I know what, I'll call myself a copywriter and I'll pretend I know how to write content for websites. And I joined local networking groups, which is where I, somewhere along the line, where I met Angus.
Yeah.
And from there, I just taught myself how to be a copywriter, sales letters, website content, got into writing blogs for people, which I really enjoyed. In the midst of all that, in 2013, I wrote a book called The Lazy Optimist.
Which I have on my shelf.
There you go. It
reaches across.
It should be right at the front because you read it, because it's self-education, not shelf decoration.
Well, what I do like about it is that it's brutally honest. And when you actually look at it, you think, wow, this was written about me. And I know that's the point, because all of us are lazy optimists. But go on, sorry.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good, because I wasn't sure if I was talking too much. I suppose that's the point of being here. So I wrote The Lazy Optimist, which was like a little anecdotal little story, really. It's again only short. It was actually modeled on like The 1 Minute Manager and Who Moved My Cheese. It's got that look, and it's and it was just a 5-chapter story about a guy called Charlie who was basically probably 85% me, and how he realized one day he was a lazy optimist. He was optimistic, he was busy, he wasn't lazy, but he was lazy with his dreams. He just thought life would deliver because he worked hard, and he just realized that after a while, that's just not the way it is. You have to be a little bit more proactive with what you want to achieve in life. And it was that realization that I wrote sort of retrospectively, looking at me getting out of the rat race and starting working for myself. And that was the idea, really. And from there, somebody in Wiley, the big publishing company, they through a friend of a friend, a publishing editor from Wiley got hold of The Lazy Optimist and called me one day. I was absolutely delighted. That's like my dream come true. I said, have you got another book? And we had a conversation, and then they said, and this was sort of self-publishing was happening then, but it wasn't as much as it is now. They said, for us to publish you, we need to know you can sell books. Do you have an audience? And I had my BNI group and a few other people at the time. So I said, no, I'll probably sell 20 copies to my friends. And they said, we need you to sell 2,000. And I knew a guy who ran a big business organization at the time. And I said to him, I can't, but I know a man who can sell books. And so I co-authored a book with this chap, and we got it published by Wiley Capstone, which was a real feather in my cap. It was really exciting for me to be able to do that. And
I just remember the buzz at the time around the writing of it, the signing of it in Waterstones as well.
Superb,
great. I mean,
And what's that book called?
So that one was called Build Your Business in 90 Minutes a Day, that one. And again, looking back, that's not actually, I would actually put that as not a very good business book. Trouble is that's one that's got my name on. But on the back of doing that, so don't go and buy The Lazy Optimist, don't go and buy that one. But on the back of that, somebody asked me if I'd write their book for them. That was probably about 4 years ago, and that book did really, really well. And I can't tell you the names of books from then. Well, actually, a few of them I can, because some of my customers are actually really smart. They say, why would I understand that I'm good. I'm an expert at what I do. I'm not an expert at writing books. So it's still very much their book.
Isn't that the nutshell here, that so many people think just because they can drive or do something that they can actually write about it, and they can't. Yeah. And something, yeah. You know, it's just, yeah. Your service, I think, is amazing. I really do. Because you kind of know how to get the best out of people. And it's quite a process, isn't it? It's quite an involved, interactive process.
The plan is
stopped you, sorry.
That's all right. That's okay. The plan is the important bit. But what I wrote a little post recently, no, actually, I think it was a few months back, called Is Ghostwriting an, what did I call it? Is Ghostwriting an Acceptable Deception? An Honest Deception, I think I called it. And the whole point was that when you go, what you just said there, Angus, about the driving was one of the analogies I used, is when you go somewhere, perhaps you're a film star and you go from your house to the studio, it's the taxi driver that takes you there. You're still the film star, you're still the person that's doing it, but somebody else takes you on the journey. But there's no, at no point does someone say, oh, well, that means you're a fake because you didn't get yourself to the studio. I really believe my work is still somebody else's story.
Yeah, I do.
I just translate their story for them.
And also get the story into a form that is relatable as well.
It works. Yeah, but it's still very much their book, their story. I'm happy not... People even say to me sometimes, do you not get any credit? Doesn't it bother you that someone else might get really successful with a book and you don't take any credit for them? I get paid. That's my job.
And I think, you know, because... We actually talk about this category of one. I think you really have got your category of one absolutely nailed down, and I think it's brilliant. And I think what you do for people is what's needed right now, because I think there's too much time and effort is spent on social media for no effort, no output, no result. That having a book and having somebody help them to get that book out of themselves is just a great, great gift and great skill.
Yeah. I'm assuming that if you write all of these business books, that you're the expert.
Yeah.
I can hold my own in most conversations because people think I'm intelligent because I know lots of other people's good stuff.
I think you are less the underconfident, you know, less achiever than you think. You know you're good at what you do. And throughout the time I've ever known you, you know, you've always been focused and really, you know, sort of determined to get to where you are, which I think is amazing. Not because you're as thick as a brick, because you're not. You just did.
Yeah, because I think there's a special talent, isn't there, is taking the content of somebody's mind and actually sorting it out and making it into something that's coherent and readable. Because that's the issue, isn't it? Is because there are sometimes we can talk with our hands and feet and explain something, but actually it's quite difficult to make it into a written word and make it entertaining. Yeah.
I think the danger of all of this self-publication is that a lot of people say that they're an Amazon bestseller they're, you know, and you think, well, what have you got to do to be an Amazon bestseller? There was a book put out by somebody and all it was blank pages, or it said, this is an Amazon bestseller, and it had nothing in it, and it became an Amazon bestseller for that. But what does that mean?
I think that's the thing, is there is a process, there is a way now anybody can get that label. You can buy the label, the tag.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, that proves the point, the story that you just said about the blank book. There is a way you can do it.
There's a future for my book then.
No, but it's, yeah, it's beyond that. It's like the one of my favourite phrases I used to tell people when I did website content and sales letters and that is that I just think this is a sad reality, but it is a reality all the same. So it's the world we have to live in. But it was that a great product, a bad product well marketed will always outsell a good product badly marketed.
Yeah,
and it's a shame that way, but it's true. And so you have to be good at marketing as well. But eventually a bad product will catch up with itself. So to be sustainable, you need good marketing and good product. And that's what goes on. But because bad product, good marketing will catch itself out in the end.
I mean, I just remember my mum always saying, you can't be backward in coming forward, which I think kind of sums it up. You've just got to be out there and just pushing. But you're right. Good marketing of a bad product works, but at some point there's got to be a payoff where people say, actually, this isn't what it's all meant to be.
Yeah, someone might actually read it.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's back to that thing, isn't it? Somebody might actually read it. And that's where there's quite a few business ideas that come crashing down because actually they're hollow. It's all bluster with nothing behind it, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how many projects are you currently working on? Are you working on
too many to is the honest truth. I've got to the point in the last year where I have had to get other people to help a little bit, which is good for me as a business. I've always thought I'm the typical one-person business where the stumbling block, if you like, is that it's all around me.
Yeah.
And I'm not very, there's a lot of things about running a business I'm not very good at. And so I've learned so much over the years. I don't always apply it, but I've learned so much over the years that you need help. You need to get out.
Yeah, and I think that's our egos getting in the way where we think we can do it on our own. I mean, I'm past the point now, I think, where I'm ever going to build a multinational intergalactic business. You know, I am the business, and you know, it's just too late, really, unless I do something else.
I think your book should be called The Reluctant Delegator.
But I have actually delegated. I mean, I've actually been quite good over the last year and a bit. I've used VAs, I've used product designers, I've used designers, I've used IT people, far more than I've ever done before, because I'd spent hours trying to work it out. Why? Yeah. Why am I doing that?
Well, I got lucky that I came across about 3 or 4 years ago an excellent copywriter who I started giving website content to, because I stopped the more I stopped doing that and focused on ghostwriting books and blogs, which is what I really enjoy doing, I started giving work to her. And it just turned out that technically she's a far better writer than I am. So I then asked her if she would go and train as a editor and proofreader and get her qualification. And so she does all that for me now. All the proofing and editing at the end of the manuscript. And she's brilliant at other things as well, at marketing. And so she's become part of my team now, Teresa, and she's just fantastic. So I got lucky then. That helped.
Yeah, but I think that it's that thing where, you know, if you ask the universe for help, then someone and something comes along in order to do it. You know, be bold and things will come to your aid, you know, whatever that quote is.
Then being bold is one thing. Being bold and having a big dream and going for it is one thing, but making sure that you have and that you don't try and do it on your own. And I think that's kind of a bit of a common theme, Angus, with the successful people that we interview.
I think so, yeah. And they all get to the point where they think, I just can't be doing this on my own. I can't. I mean, no one ever got to Everest on their own. You know, I mean, Hillary would not have done it without Tenzing, you know, and that's what I keep always bear in mind. So I mean, personally, I'm always open to getting help. I know that a lot of businesses are, but some aren't. And I think that's, they just hold themselves back. They're not helping.
So get yourself a book coach.
Get yourself a book coach.
A LinkedIn coach.
A LinkedIn coach, a business coach.
Business coach,
Good God, we've actually set the worlds to rights now. Are we open now? Are we open for business globes?
Business. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I think that's the thing, but it also gives you more time to focus on the things that you are good at. I just identified that what I'm good at, and it's the so I've been almost doing this, but the same as when I started copywriting, I learned on the job with the book writing. I've done what I think, and the books I've tried to guide people to write books that I like to read. But I've spent the last year, I've sort of really realized that I need to get more edumacated, Stan Laurel. More edumacated myself. So I've spent the last year, what I've really been digging into is plot lines and the essence of stories in storytelling, because I think that's got such an important part to play in telling business, teaching business lessons. So plot lines and stories and story structure is something I've been looking into and learning a lot about. And also the brain's reaction to emotional reaction to things as well. So I've been really trying to bring that into my craft, if you like, what I do. And the planning is so important, getting the plan and the structure before you start.
And yeah, because again, I've been dibbling and dabbling with a book, and I've got a plan that and a structure, but it changes, and I need to really sit down and say, okay, what am I trying to achieve with this? You know, I've got two funny stories. I can't weave a whole book around two funny stories.
You've got three. I'm sure I've heard another one.
Oh no, yeah, no, three. Yeah, yeah. And of course, I've got to get the Angus Bingo stuff in. You know. They are to social media what King Herod was to babysitting, all those kind of ones. But planning, and I think I need
actually,
to
I forget the book. Let's have a game.
Yeah.
You could have a board game. We could
Angus and I started writing a sitcom once.
We did. Called?
Am I allowed to say in case someone else? Networthers.
and it's the parody of networking, you know, where people arrive, the so-called IFA arrives in his beaten up Skoda or Vauxhall Vectra.
I think we might have to enact that. I think we might need to find some.
Yeah, the time management coach always arrives late.
Or halfway or the wrong time.
That's right.
And the IFA, as the series goes on, his suit becomes more gravy laden, you know, splodges. Person who's selling the Forever Vibrant franchise looks like they could just be rushed to hospital very quickly because they look very poorly.
And the manic depressive motivational coach.
Oh no, this is
I think we have a new podcast series.
Well, there is, because I mean, net worthers, I think, would be, and I would love someone like Ricky Gervais to get involved, because I know he would, I'm sure he would like, and he's Hemel based a lot of the time, Martin, you know.
I think it's got potential. It was
and every time
laughing about that, didn't we, all the characters, because we know most of them.
It's true. And every time,
so I suppose it's what they say, isn't it, base it on your experience.
And every time I go out and I'm in a room, I sometimes have to bite my lip because I'm thinking I'm talking to Tracy, the next networther character.
Well, that line you said, she is to social media what King Herod was to babies. That came from somebody we know, didn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of her name. It's probably a good idea.
No, don't. Because I'm just going to drop it in and do myself no favours at all. I know. And it's true. I think that people self-promote themselves to a position of excellence when they shouldn't really be there.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, everyone has a right to run a business.
Absolutely. And everybody does it in their own way and finds their own customers, don't they?
Yeah.
So I suppose the question is, Martin, what's the best advice you've ever been given?
So just on that point, actually, I think one of the problems with all of us in networking is we're frightened to be honest, because with the whole net worthers thing is that people, we're all prone to it. Lots of people are pretending to be successful and everything's great when when we know that there's struggles and there's people need help, as we've said. And I think if people, I don't know if this is advice, this is just something I've learned over the years, really, is to actually create honest relationships with people. Be a little bit, you don't want to go and bare your soul to everyone, sort of thing. You need to build trust, but to actually build open relationships with a closer network of people outside your broader network is really, really important. And to be able to say, look, I'm struggling with this, can you help? Because I know that if somebody asks me to help, and this is being honest with myself, this isn't being proud and pat myself on the back, but I know if somebody asked me for help and I was able, it was in my power to help them, I would. So I also think that means that I wouldn't want to deny someone the chance to help me if I needed it. So that's the humble bit, is to go and say, look, I need some help, can you help me?
And I think that with lockdown and whatever's been happening, you know, I think there is a tendency for people to be really scared about what's happening, but not to be honest about it and not to talk
about
it.
Well, I disagree with you. I think people are being more honest now.
I think they are, but
we're all in the same challenge together, it's much easier to talk about that challenge and therefore what particular issues you are then having with challenge.
Yeah, of course.
But I can see that the walls are going back up as we go back to normal.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that there's some, it's deniers, really, isn't it?
It is, and you know, all the people that talk about the fact that they're smashing it and doing well, all power to them. But you know that a lot of them, it's just a secret cry for help, I think. And you know, I actually get to speak to a lot of people about you know anything to do with drink issues, because obviously the last couple of years has really highlighted that, and some people are just so entrenched and get so scared. But I think honesty is a perfect point.
Honesty,
Mark,
yeah,
it really,
absolutely.
Really is. So if that's the best advice you'd be, what is, so?
We ask what you've been given, not what you would get, what you give. So have you got somebody that you always look up to that always gives you good advice? Or
other than Angus.
He's held up a placard to say that's what he had to say.
Say me with an arrow.
So the guy that I mentioned before that I co-wrote the, so I was involved in all the networking group. I've tried the 4N, the BNIs, all those, and all the other things. I don't do any of that anymore, although I'm involved in Hertfordshire Chamber of Commerce, Business Buzz. I've tried to get to as much as I can. I sort of turn up every now and then, probably not as much as I should. But I enjoy face-to-face networking, but I'm not really involved in any organized groups. But what happened is I joined this business training organization, and what I learned from that was, it was a very large organization that I got involved in, but I learned from that I needed mentors. I needed people to teach me the bits of business I didn't know. But on the back of that, I then took up, this was quite a big thing for me to start with. I actually started paying a business coach, and it was quite a lot of money, really, for me as a small business, but it made all the difference. He was great, but I've switched business coaches now. The business coach I've got at the moment is, am I allowed to name drop? Because I'm not sure if your people know him. Am I allowed
if you find somebody that helps you, that's really great.
Yeah. His name's Ash Taylor, and his background is he's a tennis coach, a professional tennis coach. What I like about Ash is he's always said, I was always a better coach than a player. So he played tennis. He loves golf now. He doesn't touch a tennis racket anymore. But what he does for me is because sport is all about what goes on in your head, he's so good at getting inside my head. My biggest problem is a little man that lives in my head called Ed, which stands for easily distracted, who I've written about before. Is my fight with Ed all the time. And Ash really understands how to deal with Ed, because he's got that sports psychology mentality, and he applies it to business in a brilliant way. So he might not be everyone's cup of tea, but for me, he really is very good. And that's so important, to have someone that understands your head.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting. I think lots of people have business coaches or mentors at different times in their journey, and it's about having the right one for the right journey, for the right part of your journey or whatever it is. And there is a really interesting book. I don't know if you've ever read The Inner Tennis Game.
No.
Yeah, there's an Inner Tennis Game which talks exactly about that. You know how to play tennis, you know all the tricks, and it's just how you do it with how your mindset. Yeah. And it's a really interesting
another book for the
it's
list.
It's another business book, and that is a business attitude, because it's your attitude. And we talk about something called the DAC factor. Come to my course and find that about that. And that is all about attitude.
Yeah.
It's your drive, your attitude, and your confidence that make the difference.
Yeah. So what is the DAC factor?
Drive, attitude, and confidence.
Attitude and confidence, like that. But I think it's so true. And what you're saying is absolutely right. Is that my first business coach I described him as a teddy bear with a flick knife. He was such a lovely guy, understanding, but he also knew when to say, right, you're making excuses now. That he had the balance right there. And I feel like, again, this isn't pat myself on the back, but I've been doing this for 16 years now. I feel like that I know what to do. I just cannot always do it. I think most people that, if you've been in business 5 years, even if you've been self-employed, it's just you for 5 years, you know what to do. You definitely need help doing it. And I still pay quite a lot of money, really, for this coach, but I pays for itself every month. I wouldn't be in business if I didn't have a coach for the last 10 years. I just wouldn't still be here.
Yeah.
I haven't got what my wife calls a proper job.
Yeah, proper job.
You see, I say it's you're a cheerleader with a whip.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the teddy bear with a flick knife, and I think we all need that. I don't have a formal coaching relationship with anybody, but there are some mentors that I have, and who are just so direct and brutal. It's quite painful talking to them, because they say you are just, and I'm sure I can say this on this here, you are just dicking about. Stop dicking about and get on with it. You know, busy work. You know, shifting, shuffling, whatever, you know, isn't work.
Yeah. I don't need somebody to agree with me. I do that.
Yeah, exactly. What you want to do is you want to have someone that challenges you. It's challenging you in the right way, isn't it?
Yeah.
And actually, you kind of, it's a little bit of the psychology is getting underneath your skin to, so that you stop making excuses and you go, okay, I haven't got any more excuses. Now I know what to do.
But trust is an interesting thing, because I know this is part of my personality. If somebody who I don't really know, or well, it could be somebody haven't built any, not even respect, that sounds disrespectful, but if I haven't built trust in them and they disagree with me, I can sort of take offense at it. But if it's someone who I do have trust in or I value their opinion, I actually really like it when they say, no, I don't agree with you. To me, that says that they respect me, because they're prepared to tell me that.
It's coming from a caring point of view, isn't it? They're challenging you because they care, not because they're being pedantic.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people's businesses would do so much better if people did just that. Just said, no, you're talking rubbish. No, it's wrong. I think you're doing this wrong. You know,
isn't that how you got one of your biggest clients, Angus, when you challenged them?
Yeah, I did. And I just offered their money back. And I said, I can't be asked with this, because you're just so processed. No wonder you never get stuff done. Yeah. You know, having to go through this process of acknowledging the email that acknowledged the other email. What the heck? I haven't got time for this. Yeah. Go. And that was it.
Another really good lesson I've learned over this. In fact, I think we've had some of these experiences, Angus, with people, is that when things are tough, when money's tight and that sort of thing, you tend to say yes to everyone. And when things are a bit better, you're a bit more picky about who you work with, and you're a bit more bold to say, no, I don't agree with you, to customers and that sort of thing as well. Right. And it's the whole, what is it, the piano notes? I think you'll find the black ones play louder than the white ones. Was that?
Who's that?
Anyway, we're a bit distracted on that. Yeah.
Heads on playing Dudley again.
Moore. Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, I think it was.
Yeah.
But what I think is you need to be bold and say, even when things are tough, still say the right things. That's the point I was sort of trying to make.
Yeah, and the thing is you actually be tough on the subject, not on the person, is what we always say.
Yeah, sure.
So actually, if you don't, it's not a personal. It doesn't have to be personal. It's about what is happening or not happening that you're tough on.
Yeah, definitely.
We were going to ask you something that was funny, but it sounds like we need that net worthers thing written.
The thing is, though, whenever I see Martin, and Martin was kind enough to come along to the last LinkedIn lunch as you were there, mm-hmm. Jill. And I think every time I see Martin, the first thing I think of, I feel guilty for not having four episodes already written.
And right, we're gonna goal map this, Mr. Grady, and we're gonna sort it out. Because
I
just think
that, I mean, even on that occasion, there were a couple of perfect people for them.
I would love to do it. I so would, and I've always thought it'd be fun to try a bit of acting. I want to be in it.
Yeah.
I can feel an award ceremony with a bit of pastiche.
A bit of
going
like
on.
Stan Lee-ism. You know, where you have to be in your own production. But the more people I've spoken about it to over the years, someone actually gave me a list of their characters who they bumped into. And you just think, wow.
So instead of that cliche question, which is if everybody's got a book in them, what would yours be? And this sounds like everyone's got a play in them. What would yours be?
Yeah, everyone has got a net worth as character in them.
Yes, absolutely true.
You know, who they are dying to. And because the joy of it is that we all know them. We all know them. We are
what makes it funny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's so close to home that it hurts.
Well, actually, that's the power of stories again. That's the... when I sort of liken stories as a storytelling plot to a stand-up comedian's routine, is what makes it, especially with this sort of situational comedy that people use, is what makes it funny is that when people are talking, you say, yes, I know that person. I've got an uncle like that. I saw that situation as well. So that's what makes it funny. And they're the consummate sort of storytellers as comedians, because they always, what you find is they always reference to the first joke they tell, they always come back and reference back. There's so much you can learn from a comedian's set in terms of storytelling. It's relevant, and its flow and its structure. It's very well thought through.
And there's a little bit, you can see where the thread is woven into the story all the way along.
Also, in isolation, a lot of their jokes wouldn't be funny. Yeah. It's because it's part of the, and so it, there's, I think it was Alfred Hitchcock that said, life, drama is life with all the dull bits taken out. Yeah. And sometimes in a book, there will be dull bits in a book, because there's some bits you just need to say, this is how you do this. This is the facts. But if it's held together with the stories and the intrigue and the want to read the next page, then you can get through those bits that you just have to put in.
Well, it's a bit like Billy Connolly. He's, for me, is the classic who does this. You know, his whole, I remember the funniest thing I ever heard was him talking about his time in Australia. And then he talks about being in Australia with bugs and everything. Then he somehow goes into the sea and is swimming and sees somebody's, sort of armband, thinking it's a shark. And then later on, he comes back to that. Is so, and his stories about working in the shipyards and are just wonderful, because it's
real life, isn't it? And that's where you see it's that. Yeah, that is probably, he probably takes out the boring bits of those.
So after this podcast, I'm going to schedule a net worthers meeting where we all bring three characters along.
I think if you ask people to create their five characters, anyone that doubles up, anyone that's on your list and my list to the script, anyone that we both know.
I just dream about it being a reality and then people phoning you and going, was that me?
We'd have no friends left.
This sounds like you should be script writing, not book writing.
You bugger. That's me. You
could at least change more than one letter in my name.
It's really interesting talking to you. Martin, I'm going to go back and rewrite my book. What about you, Angus?
Rewrite
my life.
Rewrite my life. Just, I think I'm just going to lie more, just fabricate more. Just basically, you know, and just be honest. But no, Martin, I mean, it's so good to have you on here, because I've known you for donkey's years and I massively respect what you do. And you're always there for great advice. And again, the advice you give is sometimes quite brutal, you know. No, that dress doesn't suit you, Angus. Blue was never your colour. No, but you're just, brilliant. Utterly, utterly wonderful. Is there anything you want to say that kind of would kind of sum up what you do and how can people get hold of you?
So you can book time through my website. I'm trying to be better on LinkedIn. So my website is businessghost.co.uk. So you can book, you can go on there and book a spot in my diary. LinkedIn is always a good place. I look at LinkedIn every day. I try and be as active as I can on LinkedIn. There's some bloke I know that's always telling me I'm not doing enough and that sort of thing.
I think his name's Ed.
Got nothing better to do. That's why.
Yeah. But yeah, LinkedIn's probably the best place to have a conversation, to start a conversation. So
we put all of the contact details in the blurb, but it's really, really cool to, we've got, there we go, Angus, that's going to be a bit of a nightmare, the blurb. How do you write the blurb for a book, for a ghostwriter?
I know. I was hoping that Martin would...
Oh, we're going to need a long session later.
We might have to hire a ghostwriter.
Thanks so much. Catch up with you very soon, Martin.
Take care. Thank you very much. All right.
So I guess it's that time again, Angus. What is bugging you? What's angering Angus today?
I'm gonna buck the trend and I'm gonna applaud something. And I think
you're beginning to buck the trend more often than you're staying angry. It's a little bit, it's killing this podcast,
I think I'm being tired of angry. No, but I applaud people getting back to me, which I think is, this year, more people are getting back to me positively, not saying yes to stuff, but actually having a conversation about stuff to say, you know what, that's a good idea, but this is probably going to stop me doing that, this or this, and can we work around it? But getting feedback, I think, is just really good. And starting one of those old-fashioned, I'm going to use the C word, conversations.
Yeah.
They seem to be, people are really picking up on that this year.
Maybe they have listened to some of your moans before about people not responding.
Maybe. But
we have more than one listener, Angus, that means.
That means we have three listeners. My Lord. We must send them some Jaffa cakes. How about you? What coach's couch thing have you got?
Well, I had an interesting one. At this time of year, so the beginning of the year, after a lot of upheaval, people are changing what they're doing. And I've had somebody said, I've just left the corporate world and I'm struggling to know how to present myself. And I think that's quite a challenging situation, because when you work in the corporate world, no matter what you do, is you're not being necessarily your authentic self. You're representing the company. So you're representing the company. You have to work to their vision, mission statements, and all of those lovely values that they list on the wall. And I guess that it takes time for you to discover yourself, who is beneath that. And when you've been in a corporate world or in that environment where it's specified to you what behaviours are expected, it takes a while for you to understand what your own are. And my advice would be, don't overthink it.
Yeah,
it takes a while. Yeah,
so many people overthink this, and they just go bonkers, and they eat themselves alive trying to be themselves. Just be yourself.
Yeah, don't think about it. I think it takes a while. It's an iterative process. So you're peeling off layers. So it's the big overcoat comes off first, and then you slowly you discover yourself as you're along that journey. And I would say, you know, every time you talk to somebody, you're peeling off a layer, you're discovering yourself and you're telling them. So I'd say get out there,
and,
talk
and again,
to people
I think
and network.
It goes back to, I think it goes back to believing in what you do. And, yeah. you know, I think personal branding should really be personal standing. And, you know, what is it that you do as a person? But it's the DNA, the distinctive, noticeable attractiveness of what you do, your product or your service.
Yeah, but I think that maybe, but I think maybe at the beginning, people, when you first start out, you're not really sure what that is. And no, it takes a while. And I would say.
And we're in danger here of doing a 2-hour end of the
podcast. Yeah, because this is one of your favourite subjects, isn't it?
Well, a little bit.
So, yeah, well, if you want to know more, come and talk to us. Yeah, because
why have we done transatlantic? Yeah.
Yeah, we can do that, can't we?
Yeah.
Well, on to the next one, hey. Yeah, just go out there and talk about it. And as you talk about it, you'll understand yourself and you'll get the response. Well, Martin, that was a really lovely conversation. Thank you so much, Angus, for introducing me to Martin. I know you've known him for quite a while.
Martin and I go back years, and he's a brilliant person because he, like Charlie in his book, The Lazy Optimist, you know, decided to do something about things. And Martin's book, The Lazy Optimist, really is lovely. And it says, you know, 21 came and went. And I think for all of us, we've always had 21s in our lives where we've just this time next year syndrome. And, you know, The Lazy Optimist is about doing that. And Martin's career is just great. I just really respect him for his writing skills and for his publishing skills. Look forward to working with him myself going forward.
So there's a book in you too, is there, Angus?
And it's being teased out by Martin.
Shamed out of you. It's about telling the story, right, isn't it?
It is.
Get in touch with Martin Gladish.
Good guy.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of our podcast. Hopefully you'll listen to some more and you'll come up with some questions for the old dog.
Yeah, and some new tricks for us both. So if you've got any questions, got any points of view, please do get in contact. We do have an email address. Please use it.
Podcast@business-buzz.org. Catch up with you soon. Bye for now.
Take care.